Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Stuart Acuff with Utility Workers Union of America, asking you to tune in every time you can to Bob Carson's Carson's Corner, one of the best pro-labor shows in America. We love it at Utility Workers. We love it across the AFL-CIO, and we're grateful to Bob for coming on and holding up our issues and holding up our principles and values.
I'm Andrew Craig. I'm an investigative reporter and attorney based in Washington, and I've the author of Presidential Puppetry, Obama, Romney, and Their Masters. And I want to encourage everyone to support, listen to, and talk about the Carson's Corner show in New Jersey, which is a pioneering, courageous, and apt voice for progressives in New Jersey that I first came to know in 2009 when he was the pioneering and virtually unique media outlet willing to take on Chris Christie, dig deep, and look at how he had come to power and how he was misusing it. And 4 years, 5 years later here, that's all come to pass.
Hi, this is David K. Johnston, and you're listening to Carson's Corner with Bob Carson.
Hi, this is Harry Kaysen, member supporter of the Zeitgeist Movement. As Zeitgeist members, we know that it is virtually impossible to find sources in the media that speak truth to power. Well, Carson's Corner does just that, and it is one of those special places where you can find out what is really going on. Not just what the bosses want you to know and think. So listen in and hear some truth at Carson's Corner. And oh, by the way, be sure to check out all the Zeitgeist and Zeitgeist-related films you can find on YouTube. We've got a world to save.
This is Les Leopold, the author of How to Make $1 Million an Hour, and I just want to tell you that you'll get a rich and rewarding experience by listening to Carson's Corner.
This is Greg Palast, reporter for BBC Television and Democracy Now! And author of the new book, Vulture's Picnic, In Pursuit of Petroleum Pigs, Power Pirates, and High Finance Carnivores. And you're listening to Carson's Corner on 5:30 a.m. Underground Progressive Radio, radio for the 99%. Help us occupy the airwaves and support Carson's Corner and support 5:30 Underground Progressive Radio.
Hey, this is Frank Schaefer, author, writer, New York Times bestseller. But I'm here today because I've got a new book called Why I'm an Atheist Who Believes in God. And I'm also on Carson's Corner because corporate media is so one-dimensional in terms of the kind of things they cover that they couldn't comprehend a discussion that would begin with a statement that implies a huge paradox. But I think there's a lot of thinking people out there who understand that life is paradoxical, and Carson's Corner is one of those places you can discuss it. So thanks for being with us.
Welcome live to another edition of Carson's Corner here on Blog Talk Radio and also on the CommonsProjectNetwork.com. My name is Bob Carson. I'm flying solo this Saturday evening here. Very, very pleased to be with you here. 347-326-9749. 347-326-9749 if you want to call in and be a part of the program. We also have the chat room open as well. Feel free to chime in the chat room. I'll be monitoring that all throughout the show. And there's so many different things that I want to talk about. You know, nobody's surprised at the Darren Wilson situation. I was on Pinko the Bear Radio last Tuesday, and we were talking about this and how, you know, we knew that there was not going to be an indictment on Officer Darren Wilson, and to nobody's real surprise, unfortunately, because That's the way the system is. We have a corrupt system that I and many people argue in the election boycott advocates is invalid at this point. I think that there's a lot to be said about that. But, you know, what happened after this is Darren Wilson did an interview with a corporate media figure, okay, for a corporate news network. And you want to talk about what a sick system we have here in the United States, what a value system disorder, as the folks over at the Zeitgeist Movement would say. Darren Wilson reportedly got paid in the high six figures to do an interview. A high six figures to do a one-time-only interview at a non-disclosed location with a corporate lapdog, a corporate shill, a man who is not free because of his institutional structure. A journalist in the corporate media are not free. And this corporate lapdog basically just salivated over being interviewed with interviewing Darren Wilson. This man asked absolutely no tough questions, of course. You know, just basically wanted Darren Wilson to regurgitate his grand jury testimony. And it shows you how somebody can kill a unarmed African-American teenager, shoot him six times in the street, leave this child in the street for 4.5 hours, okay, not show a scintilla of remorse during the course of his interview, which is why I called him a sociopath on Facebook. I mean, literally, the guy had absolutely no remorse whatsoever for what happened, no feeling. And this is who, you know, represented the people supposedly of Ferguson. I mean, police officers are supposed to be public servants. Now, we know that's not the case. We know it's the very wealthy, it's the ruling class that write the law. We know it's the very wealthy and it's the ruling class that own the property. Okay, there's ownership in America, and ownership excludes, by and large, working class individuals. And some people would describe police officers and judges and you know, attorneys as agents of the ruling class. I think there's a lot of truth to that. I don't call them pigs, or I don't refer to them in you know, derogatory terms, as many people that I've seen do. I don't think that's helpful, because they're workers, okay, just like us. They're just representing, you know, capitalist institutions, the institutions of oppression, okay? But, you know, it just goes to show you what a sick system we have here, where this individual does nothing for society, okay? Although I know white America would disagree with that. We're going to talk a little bit about that. But this guy does absolutely nothing for the betterment of society, okay? He shoots an unarmed man, you know, six times, okay, gets away, doesn't get indicted, doesn't have to go to trial, so there's going to be basically almost no public record of what happened, and he gets paid nearly $1 million by some corporate media outlet to do an interview. I mean, this is just unbelievable. But we should expect no less, given our sick system, okay? You know, you look at Wall Street, a good example of our sick system. You know, Peter Joseph of the Zeitgeist Movement did an interview with Cenk Uygur, and I watched all of it. And, you know, of course, Peter Joseph is an intellectual authority, okay? He's one of my intellectual authorities. He's someone that I think really people should listen to. People should take notes. Okay, and study the ideas put forth by Peter Joseph and the folks over at the Zeitgeist Movement. That doesn't mean adopting every single one of them. You know, that doesn't mean that some of the stuff that Harry Kasin has said on this program, Harry Kasin, of course, a member and supporter of the Zeitgeist Movement, is going to come to fruition. It doesn't mean that we're going to be, you know, a society in which we can work 2 hours a day and technology is going to be utilized to make life better and the you know, eliminate the need for competition. These are all ideas that we could discuss. But nonetheless, some of the market-based analysis offered by Peter Joseph and what is the driving force behind our economic system, which he says is a value system, is noteworthy in this situation. And all you have to do is look at Wall Street to understand why someone like Darren Wilson can be paid in the high six figures to do an interview in which he describes him shooting an African-American individual, a young man, and shooting him six times. Because we have a system where those that create the value in our society, people like scientists, people like teachers, altruistic individuals, are marginalized. Okay, they're under attack because they're trying to create value. They're trying to create a sustainable future, and someone like Darren Wilson, who I would be willing to bet. And you know, this is one of the things that really bothers me is that we don't hear. We hear very little about people like Darren Wilson. You know, someone like Michael Brown, the corporate media loves to dissect Michael Brown, loves to tell you, what this guy did. Same thing with Trayvon Martin. You know, we heard all about Trayvon Martin's school records and his suspension and this, that, and the other thing, but very little about George Zimmerman. At least that's what I observed during that time, although Zimmerman was arrested for domestic abuse back, I think, in 2005, and but still it's the degradation of the young black man. It's the corporate media basically presenting these folks as the enemy. And you know what really bothers me too about the Darren Wilson situation is that there's a lot of solidarity around Darren Wilson. And by and large, white America believes that Darren Wilson did the right thing because this is the God's honest truth. This is backed by empirical study. White America fears black America. There is an inherent fear in white America. And they look at someone like Michael Brown, and you look at some of the words used to describe Michael Brown, thug, demon, this and that. And this is widespread among white America, okay? They believe that ultimately it's not the corporations that are menacing. It's not the corporations that are destroying our society. It's not the offshoring of our jobs. It's not the base corporate culture. It's not the tax rate or the tax code, which is just a complete junket at this point. It is the black man. It is the immigrant. It is the poor person. And you ask yourself, why did we just have a presidential election not too long ago in which the nominee for one of the two business parties, the Republican Party, the fascist Republican Party, can dismiss 47% of Americans, talk about how 47% of Americans can't take personal responsibility for themselves, and they don't deserve government help, and they consider themselves victims, and this and that. And that message resonates with so many white people. Why is it that there's such agitation in America when it comes to things like food stamps, when it comes to, minorities, immigrants? Well, this is it. This is why the Darren Wilson situation illustrates the race problems that we have in America that are not going away because the very wealthy, the ruling class, depend on this to maintain capitalism. They depend on separating us by race, separating us by religion, by the ideas of fragmentation, as Larry Holmes of the Workers' World Party said earlier this month. to, you know, maintain economic supremacy. Okay, they divide both and conquer each. And so that's why, you know, you've got other police officers now saying, I am Darren Wilson. That's why you've got a majority of white America, okay, and I'm speaking anecdotally here, but again, this is all substantiated by empirical study. This is why you have people, you know, basically thinking that Michael Brown got what he deserved, thinking that the protesters of Ferguson are looters and they consider themselves victims and they can't take personal responsibility for themselves. This truncated view that the capitalist class imposes on us every single day. And it goes right in line with what Mitt Romney believes and what the Republican Party believes, and in the Democratic Party, because they're two sides of the same coin. It goes hand in hand. Both of these, all of these issues go hand in hand. And so that's why we're going to continue to see these incidences. That's why you're going to have an African-American in this country shot by the police every 28 minutes. It's not going to change unless we change the economic system. Because right now, you know, you ask yourself, why is there crime in the inner city? Why is it that we have people that have to steal, okay, to you know, for whatever reason? Why don't they have this in, you know, social democracies, countries like Norway, countries like Sweden? You don't have police brutality, at least not nearly to the extent that we have here in the United States. You don't have the levels of incarceration that we have here in the United States. Well, the reason why we have, you know, the situation like we have in Ferguson and all across America is because capitalism is not designed to address human need. Human need is ruled out by default with our economic system. Okay, our economic system is all about the mobility of money. It's, as Peter Joseph would say, the sequence of money, the life sequence being secondary to the money sequence of value. And what that means in layman terms is it's more important for the health of money, for money to create more money. The narrow self-interested pursuit of money is paramount above, you know, creating more life, creating life sustainability. And as we look here in the United States of America under our capitalist system, every single life form is in decline in the United States. Sustainability and efficiency are the enemies of the marketplace. Okay, if you don't believe me, just look at our healthcare system. You don't believe me, just look at our quote defense industry. Look at all the major sectors of our economy, and you'll see waste and inefficiency, but yet you'll see tremendous profits for the very few. And this is why I posted on Facebook, and this is really studied, or it's really elaborated more in Alan Moss's The Case for Socialism, is that the oppression that we are seeing right now, okay, the oppression of African Americans, the oppression of workers in America by our system of labor control, the oppression of immigrants, the oppression of everybody are representative of the underlying priorities of the economic system. As I said, this is what happens. And you've got news outlets, you've got, I don't even want to use the word news outlets, you've got propaganda fascist organizations like Fox News, and you've got right-wing talk radio across America. I always say right-wing talk radio is like the sky. You can't escape it. No matter where you go, if you turn on the radio, you get a carefully crafted dose of propaganda, okay? These institutions are dedicated to promoting an ideology that says it's okay to kill Michael Brown in the street. It's okay to dismiss 47% of Americans as lazy and as, you know, can't take personal responsibility or this. it's okay to, you know, as you recall during the 2012 presidential primary season, where you had these Tea Party people saying, let him die, talking about a 30-year-old man that doesn't have health care. This is what you know, results in results from the propaganda that we see. And it's really, really unfortunate, but that's what we have to address. We shouldn't narrowly focus on, you know, law enforcement, focus on, you know, police practices, because the police practices and law enforcement are going to be representative of the very wealthy. Okay, they're agents of the ruling class. What we need to do is change the economic system. What we need to do is establish, you know, worker-owned workplaces, and from there, you know, consciousness is transformed by experience, or vice versa. Experience transforms consciousness, and once we start to you know, take over these institutions, once we start to democratize the workplace and essentially change our value system to the point where we don't look at wealth as something that should be celebrated. We don't look at the wealthy as someone that we, or a wealthy person as someone we aspire to be. We look at that person as being well adjusted to a sick game. We look at that person in the sense that if that person has money, the more money that that person has, the less money that somebody else has. The more money, the more possessions that that wealthy person has, the less possessions somebody else has. You know, that person is rich because somebody else is poor. And once we start to really elevate the consciousness, and once we start to, you know, basically redefine our value system, then we start to move towards a needs-based society in which human need is paramount, where human need is the number one priority of the economic system in America. Okay, and a lot of this is going to be very difficult, but we have to do it. We have no choice. It's like Harry Kaysen says, we have a world to save. And that's absolutely true. And so, you know, these struggles are all intertwined. They're all related to the economic struggle that we face here in America. And so that's what I look at, because you know what, it's really unfortunate. If anything, the election of President Obama in 2008, and I supported President Obama in 2008. I supported him up until about 2010. So I go from supporting President Obama in 2008 to being an election boycott advocate, basically urging noncompliance, urging people to not vote in the election each year, as the elections are merely a farce. But the election of President Obama illustrated that we are not a post-racial society, and arguably – or we will never be a post-racial society. I mean, I can remember back in 2008, and this wasn't discussed in the corporate media, and ever since then it hasn't been discussed, but we had a white backlash to the election of President Obama. You had, you know, churches being burnt down. You had, you know, African-Americans being targeted that night by angry white mobs. You had, you know, racial spread. I mean, and this is not stopped, you know, since President Obama has been elected. This has continued. And, you know, you've had an organized white backlash to changing demographics of America that's been pretty constant. And, you know, it's like Cornel West said at the Left Forum, you know, for every socialist out there, there's 15 of these white supremacist groups. There's 15 of these sovereign citizen groups, of these Tea Party groups out there, who are all racially aggrieved. They all believe that they're working so that the lazy black person doesn't have to. I'm telling you, this idea is so widespread throughout the white community. And it's pushed by the ruling class. And this is going to get worse and worse and worse. And this is going to continue to really affect, you know, us. It's going to affect everything around us. And it's important to really note this. And it's also important to acknowledge that the Democratic Party, the other coin, the other side of the coin, the other business party, has really done nothing to change the dynamics. The Democratic Party has been complicit in us moving towards a fascist country, okay, by you know, being the lesser evil. You know, I laughed because on, I think it was Christopher Alan Driscoll's page, you had a guy saying that, you know, comparing the Democratic Party and comparing the Republican Party, it's a false equivalency. The Republican Party shut down the government. The Republican Party wants to, regulate what women can do with their bodies. The Republican Party is so much evil. And it's this mindset that locks us into the status quo, because this person is going to presumably support the Democratic Party, not because of what they do, but because of what they're going to prevent from happening. You know, it's the lesser evilism argument that is really unfortunate. But this is what locks people into supporting the election system that we have. It locks people into basically legitimizing our corporate structure. And I got to tell you, folks, what we're seeing in Ferguson right now, it's not going to go away anytime soon, because this is a worker uprising. These people are our class. The people rioting in Ferguson, the people that have been oppressed by a cycle of disinvestment, the people that have been oppressed by the outsourcing of jobs, the system of labor control that we have here in America, the treating labor as a commodity, you know, the narrow self-interested pursuit of money, the value system disorder, they've been oppressed, and they really have nowhere else to go, as I would argue most of the working class. A wise man once said, you have to go where your class is, okay? Go where the workers are. And when workers unite, and when we realize that, you know what, it's our priorities, it's our well-being, it is our mobility that matters, because all capital derives from labor, okay? It's our labor that creates their wealth. It's our labor, you know, we risk our lives working, we come in, and our employer's only responsibility is to give us a wage, to pay us a wage. He has no other responsibility to us to pay us a wage, what is a legal wage, you know, in accordance with minimum wage laws. He has no other responsibility, and yet our responsibility to our employer never ends. We have to do as much work as he piles onto us. There's no end to our responsibility to our employer, and yet our employer just merely has to pay us a wage so long as we can provide more capital for him. And our reward is that we get to live. We get to, you know, eat. We get to survive, end quote, by selling ourselves to the capitalists out there. And yet that employer, that capitalist, there's no end to the amount of profit that he can make off of our labor. There's no end to what he can do, you know, if there's an attempt to organize in the workplace. You know, you could shut the company down. You could hire replacement workers. Again, we have a system of labor control that leads people with nothing in this capitalist system. It treats people as human commodities. And so, you know, I think more and more people are going to realize this. I think more and more people, as the material conditions of capitalism continue to deteriorate, more and more people are going to come to the realization that we have no choice, that, you know, we have no future in this economic system. Now the American dream is to get out of debt. It used to be to buy a home. It used to be to send your kids through college. Now it's to get out of debt. That's it. We have an economic system that says that you're six times more likely to go into poverty than you're to become wealthy. We have an economic system where if you're born in the bottom rung of the income ladder, you have a 1% chance of getting wealthy. The equality of life chances in America doesn't exist. Opportunity in America is generational. Anybody tells you any differently, they're not telling you the truth. They're making anecdotal arguments, and that's what's left to defend the capitalist system. It's making anecdotal arguments. That's it. Oh, I know a guy. There are people out there. I know a guy. People are getting hired. There's opportunity out there. Yeah? For who? Who has the opportunity in America? You're going to tell me that the folks over at Ferguson have an opportunity in America? You're going to tell me workers, the working class, under this disgusting system that we have the opportunity in America? It's just unbelievable. It really is. But you know what? We have to realize that a wise man once said, the number one cause of crime is poverty. You have to put it in the social context. That's what's up. What we have to do. We have to put things in a social context, because we know the corporate media wants to have a truncated view on everything to serve their ideological purposes. We know that the corporate media wants us, and the capitalists want us, to see these problems as individual problems. Just going back to what Mitt Romney said in 2012, it's all individual problems. It's all personal responsibility, right? If you're not rich in America, there's something wrong with you. There's something wrong with the wiring, because we tell ourselves that the United States of America is the land of the free. This is the land of opportunity, right? This is what we tell ourselves. And with that mindset, with that constant, you know, just drumming that the corporate media imposes on us, comes the absence of any analysis when it comes to the social context, when it comes to the institutions that perpetuate, that cause and perpetuate poverty. I mean, you want to talk about ghettos in America? Why do we have ghettos in America? Well, if you listen to the ruling class press and you listen to white America, it's because black people and minorities can't take personal responsibility for themselves. It's the culture of inferiority among minorities. It's the it all comes down, you know, as Paul Ryan says, generations of inner city men not working, right? Well, do we believe that, or do we believe it's much more complicated? Do we look to things like redlining, the creation of ghettos, the culture of home ownership in America and how it excluded African Americans? You know, do we look at the, you know, I mean, this is what we have to encourage upon people. A systematic analysis, okay? No more truncated individual analysis, because you know what? Unlike the capitalists out there, unlike the ruling class, whatever you want to call them, I don't start out with the premise that people are inherently flawed. I don't start out with the premise that, you know, someone's lazy or someone's not taking personal responsibility. I think that by and large, all of us are hardworking people. All of us are, you know, trying to succeed in the best way we can in the system. But the others start out with that premise, because if you can convince people to look at the individual and nothing else, if you can convince people that the problem is in the individual wiring or the choices that people make. It's another buzzword of the elite: choices and freedom and opportunity. All of these loaded words that really have little meaning. Then there's no end to blaming the individual. I mean, you can the sheep over at Fox News, the people that watch corporate media, and by and large, Americans don't watch corporate media for news. Well, they get their news from corporate media, but you know, they watch reality TV shows. They're inundated with sports and just you know, the immaterial, irrelevant things to soothe the pain of their lives. If you can convince people that, you know, the problem is with the individual, then, you know, there's no end to the extent to which you can blame the individual. There's no end. And that individual is highly visible to those that I'm describing now. You know, for the Tea Party person, they can see, or they think they can see, the person going into, you know, a supermarket with WIC coupons. And you know, they could see the immigrant coming here and you know, sucking, draining our services and you know, getting free this and free that, all the things that you know, just aggravate white America. And that's what the ruling class plays on. It plays on these people's ignorance. Because you and I are smart enough to realize that the real thieves in our society, the real terrorists in our society, are the ones that are wearing 5,000 suits. The real terrorists are the people over at the J.P. Morgan building. When I spoke in front of the J.P. Morgan building, these sociopaths were mooning us, giving us the finger. After they had destroyed our economy in 2008 to the extent that we've never recovered. You know, how many people had to commit suicide? How many people died because of what Wall Street did in 2008, using our government as a proxy to rob trillions and trillions of dollars and then getting our government to bail them out? Those are the true culprits. It's the corporate culture in America. It's the value system that Peter Joseph talks about in the Zeitgeist movement, a sick system where the socially negative attributes of society become positively rewarded ventures for industry. And yes, I memorize all the stuff I'm talking about, folks. I don't read a script. I don't have a bunch of news clippings that I print out like these corporate media shills do. You know, and that's what happens. And that's why someone like Mitt Romney, he's the real terrorist. I mean, I got to tell you, I could tolerate an Osama bin Laden, who again, is an evil person. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that, you know, what Osama bin Laden or what Al-Qaeda did on 9/11 is justified. I'm not saying that, you know, slitting the throat of a flight attendant is justified. It's a sick act, and the people that did that were destroyed, and anybody that would do that should be dealt with. I believe me, I don't live in a utopian world where I think that, you know, there doesn't have to be some sort of military action or whatnot across the globe. Although, you know, if others may disagree with me, and that's fine. But I got to tell you that the people like Mitt Romney, the businessman, I like firing people. The behavior of Bain Capital and the mindset that these people inject, the poison that these people inject into our society, is worse than anything Al-Qaeda can do to us. The apathy towards the poor, the socially negative attributes of society being rewarded, you know, the business practices of Mitt Romney not only being, you know, immoral, but being the very fabric of our system right now. That's the real terrorist attack. And, you know, it goes to you know, the corporate culture in America. That's what's really harming us. The idea that it's okay for a corporation to make a profit any which way they can, even if it comes at the expense of America. The idea that it's okay for Walmart to use child labor to make products and re-import them here in the United States and paying their workers so little that these workers have no choice but to get government help to survive in this economy. That does more destruction to our society than anything Al-Qaeda can do. The idea that it's okay to have union busting in America, it's okay to, you know, hire lobbyists and do whatever you can to prevent workers from bringing democracy to the workplace, that is destructive to our society. That ultimately kills people. And this translates to structural violence. You know, this is a concept we really got to start, I think, focusing on here on Carson's Corner is, you know, what type violence do these corporations, do these institutions incur upon our society? And that's how we have to start to look at things. We've got to sort of change our value system in America where, you know, if you're a wealthy person in this country, then we look at you as being well-adjusted to a sick society. I want a worker to take control of things. I want a worker council. I want, you know, worker-owned cooperatives where workers can make the decisions, because that's the only fair and equitable system that can exist. I mean, think about it. It goes back to what I was talking about earlier, where, you know, you work for an employer, you have no say in the decisions. Those decisions are made behind closed doors without your consent. The mobility of capital is more important than the mobility of labor. We allow this to take place. Well, who better to know what to do? Who better to know what has to be done than the workers? And I guarantee you, folks, you know, if we had such a system, if we had worker-owned cooperatives where we redefined ownership in America, where we said, okay, it's not acceptable for in a system, an economic system, for six people, the Walton family, to have more wealth than, you know, however many millions of Americans, was it 30% of Americans, they have more wealth than, it's not permissible to have, you know, the Fortune 400 list, or it's not permissible to have 95% of the income going to 1% of the population. It's not permissible to have 1% of the population getting all of the income growth or accumulating all of the wealth. This is damaging to society. This is damaging to our lives, and this is killing us. I mean, I'll go back to a simple analogy that I've used on this program before. It's like a kindergarten class. You know, if you have a child that has all of the toys in a kindergarten class, right, and you've got a class of 10 or 15 kids, and you've got one or two children in that class that have all of the toys, have everything, well, what do you think is going to happen to the rest of those children? What do you think is going to happen to them? They're going to experience the distress. They're going to experience the social ills. And that's what we have in our system right now, where, you know, those that have nothing, those that are one medical situation away from bankruptcy, as most Americans are, those that are living paycheck to paycheck, their health is suffering. And you know, pretty soon they're going to be left with no opportunity, as if they don't have opportunity now, but they're going to be left with, you know, desperate measures. And so that's what we've been seeing. And the proof is in the pudding, ladies and gentlemen. I mean, all the empirical evidence tells us that our system, our economic system, is not working. Our economic system is not designed to address human need. And it's killing us. It really is. All right, we'll be right back. I'm going to take a brief time out here on Carson's Corner. Keep it right here. Give me a call, 347-326-9749.
Parole, no control. Food, I got my number on a wiretap. Cause I jacked for white wall.
Hi, this is Frank Schaefer, author of Sex, Mom, and God. You're listening to Carson's Corner, a show I enjoy. I hope you enjoy it, too. I encourage you to listen.
All right, we're back here on Carson's Corner in conjunction with the CommonsProjectNetwork.com. My name is Bob Carson, pleased to be with you here this evening. And we're kind of talking about a bunch of different things. Capitalism, the problems associated with our economic system. We're talking a little bit about Ferguson and how it relates to the oppression there, how it relates to capitalism, the just going around it here as we always do extemporaneously here on Carson's Corner. And what else have we got going on here? There's just so much. What I like to do, oh, by the way, I think I'm starting to gain weight again now. I gotta tell you, as I just get more and more depressed, and that's what it comes down to. It comes down to depression. It comes down to soothing the pain. Dr. Gabor Mate, who you may have seen in some of the Zeitgeist films, he's a brilliant, brilliant guy. I think he's from Hungary, or he's from Hungary, and he's Hungarian, and he is a specialist in addiction, and he really talks a lot about how certain addictions are rewarded in our society, the addiction to money. And this is a big thing with a lot of the wealthy people out there, this idea of competition. We have to be a highly competitive society. We always have to be competitive on everything, and there's always going to be winners and losers, and we just have to let the chips fall where they may. Dr. Gabor Mate asks, the real question is, why it's not, are people using drugs and are drugs available? Are drugs destructive? The real question is, why are people using drugs? People use drugs to soothe pain. Why the need to soothe pain? And I would submit to you, ladies and gentlemen, and, I realize that it's a complex problem, but I would submit to you that the problem lies in part with our economic system. The problem lies in part with the competition-based society that we have that is manipulated by, the very wealthy. Our competition is. For example, the system, the labor system that we have in America. Well, always the corporations and the very wealthy are always going to have a surplus of labor to choose from. There's always going to be more people looking for jobs than jobs that are available. Okay, and this is not because of anything that the workers have done. This is this is the competition that we have in front of us, right? This is what we're up against when we're trying to find a job. Well, this is manipulated by many of the capitalist institutions out there. For example, the Federal Reserve. Okay, the Federal Reserve is instrumental in the supply of labor out there because of the interest rates. And Dean Baker does a lot of work on this, and you know, he talks about how and Alan Greenspan, who was the Federal Reserve chair for a number of years, said it's in so many words, it's the number one function of the Fed to maintain a level of worker insecurity. And that is done through the interest rates. You know, if the unemployment rate, to the extent that is even valid, I mean, the unemployment rate is another economic abstraction, really, because we don't know, we know the true unemployment. It's like the poverty rate in America. You know, how many people, Bill Moyers posted, there's almost 600,000 people that are homeless in America. It's much more than that. Okay, these are the abstractions that are given to us. But, you know, when the unemployment rate is low in the context of our economic system, okay, then, you know, interest rates are, they're raised, or is it the other way around? Well, the interest rates are manipulated to basically, you know, cut off growth or stop employees from hiring, you know, because if the unemployment rate is high, I'm sorry, if the unemployment rate is low, then that's good for workers' wages because wages go up. It puts an upwards pressure on wages. But yet, if the unemployment rate is high, then you know the interest rates will change because that's good for employers. And so, you know, the Federal Reserve works on behalf of the banks and works on behalf of the business community to maintain a certain level of worker insecurity to keep wages low in America. And that's, you know, part of the corrupt system that we have. That's what workers are up against. We're also up against, due to economic forces, the globalization of the globalization of our manufacturing sector. Okay, you know, we have workers now in the United States competing with workers in China, workers in Vietnamese. Not because that's the way it goes, not because of the so-called free market, but because of economic forces that want to extract the most profit as they can at the cost, at the expense of society. We don't have to engage in free trade. We don't have to compete with workers in China or workers in Vietnam or other, you know, emerging countries. We have all the American ingenuity right here in this country. We have all the resources we need. We don't need to do that. But we allow the corporations to do this to make as much money as they can at our expense. And this affects the job market, and this reduces people's chances, and this leads to drug abuse. Can't find a job. I mean, you know, Jesus, you know how many college degrees I have, ladies and gentlemen? I mean, if I told you my level of education, I'm almost embarrassed to it because it goes beyond what a working class person has. You know, I'm basically a proletarian with advanced college degrees. But, you know, if I can't find a job, then what is the person with the high school education going to have? You see, we are all depreciated in this sick system. We all are rapidly depreciating because the corporate sector and the ruling class are running amok. That's why. And I'm telling you, folks, this is coming to what's happening in Ferguson right now is the beginning of a worker rebellion. We didn't have this with the Occupy protesters. You know, the Occupy movement wasn't a movement, it was more of a moment, as Paul Street points out, that was broken up by the Democratic Party. And President Obama was instrumental in the dismantling of the Occupy movement. His administration coordinated the dismantling of the Occupy movement, okay, while he's railing against income inequality, saying income inequality is the most pressing issue of our time. Now, President Obama and the Democrats are politicians serving their corporate masters. They're a capitalist party that is serving the capitalist community, okay? And so, you know, that wasn't it. But I'm telling you, we're seeing this now in Ferguson. We're seeing this sporadically in the form of worker demonstrations. We're seeing this all over the place, and it's only going to get worse. And we got to remember something. The ruling class are the most class conscious among us. They understand what's happening. They got their, you know, eyes on what we're doing, because they're worried that we may effectively challenge their rule. There's nothing that terrorizes corporations and the very wealthy more than an organized working class. There's nothing that terrorizes the corporations and the ruling class more than an even playing field, okay? And a real class awareness. And so, you know, that's what we have to do. And I'm telling you, I really feel confident that we're seeing some glimmers of hope out there. We'll see what happens. You know, that's one of the reasons why I am a member of the Election Boycott Advocates. The Election Boycott Advocates is the beginning of non-compliance, because what this is non-compliance means that, you know, you're not going to consent to the institutions that oppress you. Okay, it's been said before on this program that the ballot box is no root of power for the working class. Okay, we're not going to vote our way to a more equal society. It's just not going to happen. There's going to be no politician out there that's going to be elected to change things. All right, it's just not going to happen. Politicians are representatives of the very wealthy. Half of politicians are millionaires, and the other half are most likely rapidly approaching that status. And they are not pulling the levers of power, as Alan Moss says. The levers of power are pulling them. Even the most ideological representative will not be able to enact any type of change within Congress, because Congress is completely corrupt. Congress is just merely an extension of the ruling class. It's like Ralph Nader says, they use the government to achieve the most feasible control of outcomes, and the government is their enforcement mechanism. The government has been taken over by the corporations and the ruling class to achieve the most, you know, feasible control of outcomes, ladies and gentlemen. Corporations have no attachment whatsoever to labels. They profit from, quote, liberal ideas and use conservative ideas to get rid of regulation, which equals law and order. And so it's all meaningless. The political process is meaningless. Voting is, you know, consenting to the institutions. It's consenting to the economic system that we have in America. It's marching with your oppressors, okay? And so what we have to do, and what we're trying to do here on Carson's Corner, and other places are trying to do this well as well, you know, the Commons Project Network and other folks, is we're trying to encourage noncompliance. We're trying to build a social movement based on class awareness, class consciousness, to overtake their rule, okay? And noncompliance, it starts, you know, it extends beyond the voting box, but it starts with becoming an election boycott advocate. It says, you know what, I'm sorry, you know, the political parties are run by the billionaires for their benefit. They're you know, we have an open system of bribery in America where, you know, corporations can donate unlimited amounts of money from their treasury to buy our politicians. They, so many tools at their disposal to maintain control. And all of this, you know, I mean, think about it. If you, you know, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to figure this stuff out, okay? All corporate America has to do, all the ruling class has to do is pick up a phone, for crying out loud. All they have to do is pick up a phone, and they curry favor with the politicians. Do the workers have such means at their disposal? Do you have a contact with your politician? In fact, I guarantee you, if you poll most workers in America, they've never even heard of their local official. Or if they have, they certainly have had no contact with them. Yet you go up the income ladder, you poll a wealthy person, you see how much contact they had. This is how our system works. Even when they lose at the ballot box, they win, folks. The ruling class wins. Let's take this minimum wage, for example, this minimum wage campaign, which I'm not going to criticize because it's noble. You know, 15 in a union. This is a big campaign by the Socialist Alternative and other groups across America. Let's say we get that. Let's say we get 15 in a union, which is not going to happen, you know, under this political system. But let's say by some miracle we get there, right? Well, what the business community is going to do is they're going to go to the agency. They're going to go to the regulatory agency. They're going to go to the National Labor Relations Board. They're going to go to their court system. They're going to go to their politician and withhold money or fund a right-wing fascist Tea Party anti-union candidate. They're going to go to their media. They just have so many channels at their disposal because they control the game. They control everything. And so why would we continue to participate in such a system where workers have no control, workers have no say? That's why you've got to go with the election boycott advocates. That's why you got to say, you know what, we're through with the system. Enough is enough. We're not consenting to their rule. We're going to build our own damn political system. We're going to build our own damn media institutions, working class, worker-owned, worker-sourced media institutions. That's it. We're done with them. We're done marching with our oppressor, with our oppressors. Okay, and that is a very, very important mindset to have. That is why it's so important to support these causes and reject their institutions. Noncompliance, and noncompliance, as I said, it extends beyond not complying in elections. It extends beyond not voting in elections. It can extend to the economic system in America. You know what? The workers of Walmart in California, I forget which town it was in California, that participated in the sit-down strike, that's a form of noncompliance. That should be exercised everywhere. You know, we're not going to consent to a dictatorship known as Walmart. We're not going to continue to basically allow ourselves to be exploited and experience all of the problems associated with exploitation in the capitalist system. Therefore, we're not going to comply. We're going to take over this place. We're going to take over this illegitimate totalitarian institution known as Walmart. We're going to go to the banks. We're going to say, you know what? You've gambled with our money for too long. You've killed our citizens for too long. You're the real terrorists in our society. We're no longer going to consent to your rule. We're going to say, you know what, banking should be done in accordance with human need, in accordance with the public interests. And so therefore, we're going to take over these institutions. We could do it. We could build our own banking institutions. Okay? We're going to go to the media companies, these six media companies now that control everything that you hear, you read, you see. They tell you who to fear, as I put the picture up on the show here. They tell you who to love. They tell you who to believe. They tell you who's important, right? Nonsense. These are our capitalist, corporatist institutions that are designed to maintain the status quo and move us towards a fascist country. They're invalid. Every single person you see on a corporate media station or every person you read, if it's not coming from a working class, which is not, because working class ideas and working class individuals are ruled out by the corporate filtering system, they're invalid. Okay? They have no bearing whatsoever on your life. If it does not come from a working class perspective, if it's not worker owned, it's invalid. We have to go where our class is. And I'll tell you that the media, the pundit class, they're not where the workers are. Believe me, these people despise workers. These people do not come from, by and large, working class backgrounds. And the ones that did are far removed from the struggles of working class Americans. You could pick any elitist on MSNBC, and they're no closer to working class lives than any of the fascists over at Fox News are. And that is just a fact. We're going to reject it. We're going to go to working class sources. We're going to go to shows like Carson's Corner. We're going to go to shows like Anti-Capitalist Radio. We're going to go to shows like Pinko the Bear and any of the other shows on the commonsprojectnetwork.com. That's where the workers are, and we're going to go where the workers are. You see how noncompliance works? You see how it spreads throughout our society? And we just have to get enough people out there to realize that, you know, the system is corrupt. There's no part in there's no reason to participate in the system. And you know what? A good point to this is the fact that Christopher Alan Driscoll points this out in this program, that so many workers are not voting. You know, the working class voters in America are not voting because they don't have working class parties, whereas in other countries you have a much higher voter turnout because there are viable choices. You know, there are working class parties. We don't have that here in the United States. And so therefore it's meaningless. You know, I just read something the other day. I saw a post on Facebook. More people shopped on Black Friday than voted in the midterm elections. And that's good. That's good because nobody should vote in the midterm elections. Nobody should vote for one or two of the corporate parties, because voting does not give you a choice. It gives you the illusion of a choice, but you don't have a choice. The ruling class are not going to allow you to vote to reverse income inequality. They're not going to allow you to vote to bring democracy to the workplace, a workplace that they own. They're not going to allow you to vote to get rid of these free trade agreements, which erode our economic sovereignty and reduce our safety standards to the lowest common denominator. These immoral, wasteful, and inefficient trade agreements, which have been the economic law of the land going back to the Clinton administration. They're not going to allow you to vote to overturn these. I mean, these PACs are put together in secret. They're put together behind closed doors. They're not going to allow that. That's not up for discussion. Are you kidding me? They're not going to allow you to vote to raise their taxes. What, are you kidding me? You don't have a choice. There is no distinction virtually on issues that affect the bottom line between the two political parties. All right? And so once you realize that, you know, your choice becomes a lot easier to leave the system. Abandon the system that oppresses you. It's a very, very important point here, and it's one that I will continue to make here on Carson's Corner. So I was telling you earlier that Peter Joseph did a interview with Cenk Uygur on Cenk's show, The Young Turks, and I love Peter Joseph, man. Anytime I can catch an interview with him, I do so. But, you know, there's this concept that's discussed in the Zeitgeist movement called planned obsolescence. And, you know, I just want to point out that I'm not a spokesperson for the Zeitgeist movement. I'm a worker, basically, who's taken the initiative and has decided to do a podcast to talk about issues that are not going to be talked about, obviously, among the business community. And, you know, I'm trying to reach workers. The main objective of this program is to raise class awareness. All right. So I don't pretend to be an expert on a lot of these concepts. And I don't think there really is an expert on a lot of these concepts. You know, Noam Chomsky talks about how, you know, the average person that you hear or see on television speaking about an issue probably has a 7th or 8th grade understanding of these issues, okay? I don't believe that there's really such thing as an expert, although you can have somebody that has studied in a particular field for a long period of time, and if that qualifies them in your mind to be an expert, then that's fine. But, you know, planned obsolescence, I think, is important when analyzing our market system and analyzing our system, which is ultimately based on consumption. And basically, and again, you know, this is all extemporaneously here. Planned obsolescence is the introduction of cost cutting measures in the production process. To basically, because you know that's what capitalists do, is when they produce products, they put cost-cutting measures in the stages of production to basically, you know, outmaneuver their competitors. And it is important that things break down. It is important that, you know, products have a lifespan and become inferior the moment that they are mentioned or they're introduced on the market, so that consumption can continue and the employers and the employees can wind up buying the products that they're making to keep the whole system going. And the more consumption, the better, right? But in order for us to maintain cyclical consumption, there has to be planned obsolescence. So we have to decrease the product life in order to maintain consumption. And now what emerges out of this is the need to be wasteful and inefficient. What emerges is the fact that, you know, we have – look at your computer. Look at your laptop. This makes me so sick. Makes me disgusted. Your laptop can be built to last your entire life. There's no reason that you have to upgrade the stupid operating system and the stupid software every 10 seconds. You got to update it. You got to buy a new this. You got to buy a new that. There's no reason for any of this to take place. But the corporations do this so that you can continue to buy their product. Okay? They do this. They make these laptops to the point where they have a life expectancy of 1 or 2 years. And even if you try to take care of your laptop, you have to buy, you have to upgrade. And they put a whole bunch of dollars into marketing to make you believe that you have to have the latest iPhone. You got to have the latest operating system. And all of this is done to keep us on a path of consumption. It's all done to basically continue us to treat us as consumers and to not even give any idea of becoming a more sustainable society built on efficiency and sustainability, to just basically crush that through marketing and through obsolescence and everything. And that's what we have. And so, you know, as a result of this, you know, institutions like, you know, scientific institutions and environmental movements and anything else. They're being crushed. They're being crushed under the weight of the market system, and it's really it just goes to show you that basically everything you're buying, every transaction that you make that involves, you know, products is inherently flawed. It's, you know, wasteful and inefficient. And these are all related to our working class struggles. You know, Peter Joseph also goes on to talk about Eddie Bernays, and I've studied him. This is the guy that, you know, basically invented marketing. This is the guy that basically said, you know, we're going to treat people into, or we're going to turn people into consumers because we want them to buy things that they don't need. We want them to buy, as I said, the latest iPad gadget, the latest car, the latest this, that, and the other thing. And, you know, I got to tell you, I'm really drifting apart. I'm really just totally, you know, detaching myself from the system that we live in. As I go out in public, as I see these people, you could just see these people. You could see how these people are brainwashed into thinking that, you know, they have to have the bling and they have to have this and that, and that's going to make them a more complete purpose. That's going to basically give them status in our society. And in the market-based system, it will. In the market-based system, you know, these people are shown on television, and they're shown on commercials and movies, and you know, it's this massive brainwashing of the population out there. But you know what? When I go to a Workers' World Party conference, when I go to a rally, one of the things I love about seeing my fellow workers is these people don't give a crap about what they wear. They don't give a crap about what they look like, because their contributions to society are not going to come in the form of a stupid, you know, iPhone or a stupid piece of clothing or a car or this and that. Their contributions to society are going to come in the form of an idea, are going to come in the form of an analysis of our current economic system. They're going to come in the form of a protest or a rally or whatever. And let me tell you something. These contributions, in my opinion, are more valuable than anything else. They're more valuable than the, you know, possession-obsessed society, the sick society that we've become in America. And that's part of the reason why, you know, I see myself just becoming more and more active in the struggle, because, you know, I don't want to participate in a sick system. I don't want to do it. I'm sorry. I don't want to put aside moral qualms and I don't want to put aside reservations and become like them. I'm sorry. I just don't want to do it. And you know what? The thing about it is that there's a lot of pain in the capitalist system. There's a lot of pain when you have the coercive market, you know, breathing down your neck. You have to find a place to live. You have to eat. And all of these pressures ensure that you and I are not free. We'll never be free in this system that we have now. But you know what? It's secondary to me. It really is. Because I'm just sick and tired of it. And we just keep on going further and further and further down the path. And, you know, it's time to break the path. It really is. And so my contributions are going to come in the form of this podcast. They're going to come in the form of me, you know, congregating with workers to try to bring about change in our society, radical change. That's where it's all at, ladies and gentlemen. All right, I'm going to take a brief time out here on Carson's Corner. We'll be right back after this brief time out here. Make sure to support the commonsprojectnetwork.com, and also make sure to support this show. Friend me on Facebook at facebook.com/BobCarsonMMA. You could follow me right here at blogtalkradio.com/Carson's Corner. Keep it right here, folks.
Now, there's one thing you might have noticed I don't complain about. Politicians. Everybody complains about politicians. Everybody says they suck. Well, where do people think these politicians come from? They don't fall out of the sky. They don't pass through a membrane from another reality. They come from American parents and American families, American homes, American schools, American churches, American businesses, and American universities, and they're elected by American citizens. This is the best we can do, folks. This is what we have to offer. It's what our system produces. Garbage in, garbage out. If you have selfish, ignorant citizens, you're going to get selfish, ignorant leaders. And term limits ain't going to do you any good. You're just going to wind up with a brand new bunch of selfish, ignorant Americans. So maybe it's not the politicians who suck. Maybe something else sucks around here. Like the public. Yeah, the public sucks. There's a nice campaign slogan for somebody. The public sucks. Fuck hope. Fuck hope. Because if it's really just the fault of these politicians, then where are all the other bright people of conscience? Where are all the bright, honest, intelligent Americans ready to step in and save the nation and lead the way? We don't have people like that in this country. Everybody's at the mall, scratching his ass, picking his nose, taking his credit card out of his fanny pack and buying a pair of sneakers with lights in them. So I have solved this little political dilemma for myself in a very simple way. On election day, I stay home. I don't vote. Fuck 'em. Fuck 'em. I don't vote. Two reasons I don't vote. First of all, it's meaningless. This country was bought and sold and paid for a long time ago. The shit they shuffle around every 4 years doesn't mean a fucking thing. And secondly, I don't vote because I believe if you vote, you have no right to complain. People like to twist that around, I know. They say, well, if you don't vote, you have no right to complain. But where's the logic in that? If you vote and you elect dishonest, incompetent people, and they get into office and screw everything up, well, you are responsible for what they have done. You caused the problem. You voted them in. You have no right to complain. I, on the other hand, who, in fact, did not even leave the House on election day, I'm in no way responsible for what these people have done and have every right to complain as loud as I want about the mess you created that I had nothing to do with. So I know that a little later on this year you're going to have another one of those really swell presidential elections that you like so much. You'll enjoy yourselves. It'll be a lot of fun. I'm sure as soon as the election is over, your country will improve immediately. As for me, I'll be home on that day doing essentially the same thing as you. The only difference is when I get finished masturbating, I'm going to have a little something to show for it, folks. Thank you very much.
Hi, this is David K. Johnston, and you're listening to Carson's Corner with Bob Carson.
Yes, that's right. This is Carson's Corner with Bob Carson. We have a caller on the line from 304 area code. I think I know who this is. Justin, is that you, my friend?
It is, Bob. How are you doing, my friend?
Good, good, good. We got about 5 minutes left, man. It's good to see you on the program. It's been a while since we've heard from you here on Carson's Corner.
Oh, absolutely, Bob. And I got to say real quick, I was sitting here cracking up. You played my favorite comedian of all time, George Carlin.
Yeah, he was great, man. That guy was just a philosopher, really spoke a lot of truth to power. And I think Carlin's been dead for a few years now, but he really just, I think, was almost larger than life to a lot of people out there.
Oh yeah, and he was like us, Bob. He wasn't afraid to speak his mind in any way, shape, or form, and that's what made him such a commodity, I think.
Yes, well said. Absolutely, he was, and you know, he there was a certain amount of realist to him. He was a struggling guy, battled with drug addiction. Really was a working class guy, as far as I could tell. Was a cab driver for a number of years, and really encompassed a lot of the working class, you know, ideals that you and I share as well. So you know, it's always good to play a little Carlin on this show to make people, you know, miss what they once had.
Oh yeah, definitely, and you know, and it made me think of the late comic Robin Williams. You know, God rest his soul. You know, he was a genius as well. You know.
Yeah. Absolutely, he certainly was. I could think of many movies that I've seen him in, and I really connected with his character. So what have we got going on? What's why don't you update people, my audience, and let them know what you've got going on, Justin?
Well, I've actually got a few shows lined up, but not only that, Bob, but my show is like everywhere on the internet now. It's on.
Yes.
It's on Stitcher Radio, on iTunes for free. So it is everywhere. It's becoming a big commodity. It's even on some websites even. So it's getting everywhere.
Yes, absolutely. I could personally attest to that. And that's great. And that's due to the hard work that you have really put into everything. And we mentioned, too, on the MMA show that you're also going to be inducted into the Hall of Fame coming up in 2015. And speaking of which, we're also going to have a show on the Carson's Corner MMA edition with Justin Harvey and Master Todd Summers to discuss this and more. And that's going to be coming up on Monday here on Blog Talk Radio. So make sure to stay tuned for that as well.
Oh, yeah, and I'm going to give your audience a little teaser, too, Bob, and I'm not going to go into much detail, but not only that, I believe in 2015, yours truly and Bob Carson will be doing a brand new podcast together.
Absolutely. It's going to be you know, something along the lines of entertainment, and as more details become available, we'll let you know. It should be really fun because, you know, there are certain hobbies that we like to do, Justin and I, and so the new podcast will center around something that we like to do in our off time here. We got about 60 seconds left, Justin. Why don't you give people any social networking sites or anywhere you want to direct them to where they can learn more about what you got going on?
Okay, you can follow me on Facebook and Twitter at Justin Ray Harvey or email me at JustinRayHarvey@ME.com.
Perfect. Well, listen, Justin, thanks for calling in. We really appreciate it. We look forward to speaking to you on Monday. And, yeah, we'll keep the fight going and wish you the best of luck, my friend. And thank you for all that has joined us here on Carson's Corner. Again, I want to remind you to support the CommonsProjectNetwork.com. Make sure to find me on Facebook at Facebook.com/BobCarsonMMA. And until next time, ladies and gentlemen, show some
respect.
Thank you. Take care, Justin.
Take care, Bob.
Bye-bye.
Bye.